The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of Audlin Brown, BD Developments, Stem Cell Technologies, and listeners like you.
In 1970, Canada led the Western world by recognizing China. According to Paul Evans in his book, Engaging China, the Prime Minister of Canada, Pierre Trudeau, believed that many of the world's major issues will not be resolved completely or in any lasting way unless and until an accommodation has been reached with the Chinese nation. Over the course of the next 50 years, the Chinese economy and its clout grew from 1.7% of global GDP to more than 17.3%. China went from being one of the poorest countries on earth to one of the most powerful economies. Through that growth, China invested heavily in Canadian energy and technology companies, as well as many other sectors in Canada. Then, at the start of this century, the relationship between Canada and China started shifting. China started to flex its muscles, and Canada seems to have failed to realize at that time that it was no longer the dominant member of this relationship. Along the way, China grew tired of being told what and how to manage its affairs. Enter Xi Jinping, who had no patience for moralizing and virtue signaling. Canada woke up to China's influence and influencing tactics at home and abroad. And over the past 5 years, the relationship has soured. I invited Paul Evans, Professor Emeritus at UBC, to join me for a conversation that matters on what happened between Canada and China and beyond what is now happening between us and India. Paul, welcome.
I'm glad to be with you.
The central question here is, what did happen? When we take a look at the relationship, it looks so promising to begin with. Pierre Trudeau opened up that relationship just ahead of Italy, as I recall. But it created a very special place for us, and that relationship had been beneficial for both nations for quite some time. What was it that made it work then, and what started to shift so that it's now working so well today?
Well, the idea of engaging China, that philosophy that Trudeau had in 1970, and about 60% of Canadians supported, was based on the idea of the importance of China, as you noted. It's he felt that unless China was brought into the international system, the system was going to have ongoing structural problems. He also brought it in because, and opened relations with China and used engagement, because it had economic advantages to Canada. China was a very poor economy in 1970, but as the idea that China was going to grow and become more important, in fact, beyond anyone's wildest imaginations in 1970, it did open up economic opportunities. But there was a third part of what Trudeau wanted in engagement, and which most of his successor prime ministers agreed with, was that there was a moral case for engaging China. And that was the hope that by bringing China into the world, some Chinese behaviors might be altered. At the most extreme, some felt that democracy might come in the wake of this engagement of China, that not only Canada, but later the United States and almost all of our major countries in the world, our partners, went for. But that idea that we would be in some ways changing China. And I think that regardless of who our political leader was, somewhere around the time that Xi Jinping took power in 2013, 2014, it pretty quickly became clear that the third part of engagement, that moral dimension, let's encourage a particular path for China, it had worked spectacularly in some economic issues, but it wasn't happening politically. This idea of a convergence with Western democracy, that liberal economy would lean to liberal politics, wasn't working. And China has become increasingly repressive at home. It's become muscular internationally. And it's no longer in a situation where there's almost anyone who expects it to be able to be a future Western democracy with a Western capitalist system. China is a Chinese system. And that was going to cause problems for any Canadian leader. Add on to that the chemistry of a relationship where a lot of Canadians were enthused about China. Exciting place, opportunities, not just commercial, not just strategic, but people-to-people connections. Things went sour, and that hit a high note, an inflection point, with the three M's affair, mm-hmm. Meng Wanzhou and the two Michaels. So a growing, more powerful China, as you noted, was essential. But the chemistry changed in the relationship when those two Michaels were imprisoned. And it's something that we haven't got over. We're recognizing China's is assertive internationally. It is repressive at home, and it pushes its interests internationally and through in our political system. So the shift has been significant, maybe reversible in certain respects, but the general trend line is what we're living with a new global China.
Well, that's interesting. You bring up it may be reversible in some aspects. What has to happen for us to make a U-turn here and grow back to a better understanding that's based on mutual respect?
You know, that idea of mutual respect has almost gone out the window. When we Canadian leaders talk about how to deal with China, they talk about the three C's. Competition, strategic competition with China, cooperation, but also confrontation. And there was a fourth C that Mark Garneau tried to introduce, coexistence. Mm. And that's that mutual respect. I think there's more prospects for that in Canada than there is prospects for that in the United States, where geopolitical competition, China as adversary or enemy, is bipartisan consensus that dominates American approach. Canada's lined up with a goodly part of that approach, but there's still an element of Canadian thinking that under the right circumstances, China will and can make adjustments that at least are in line with our values, if not identical to them.
The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of Audlin Brown, BD Developments, Stem Cell Technologies, and listeners like you.
I found it interesting when Donald Trump came to power, he immediately locked horns with China. And as a matter of fact, you can go back to the 1990s, Donald Trump was taking out full-page ads in the New York Times warning about an increasingly cozy relationship with China and how it would be detrimental to the United States. Well, once in power, he definitely asserted that perspective. What surprised me was that President Biden, when he assumed the office, did not reverse Trump's approach towards China. As a matter of fact, he almost seems to have doubled down. How important is it to Canada that we pay attention to the way in which the United States is managing its relationship with China?
Absolutely fundamental. Canada, the trade relations or interconnections with the United States are deep and profound, but also is our strategic interests, our defense interests, et cetera. So that as we watched what Mr. Trump did with the tariffs, a trade war with China, mm-hmm. and a technology war. The trade war makes Canadians a little bit nervous. We don't like it when the United States imposes trade restrictions. And in fact, as we're looking at the Biden administration, it did not stop those tariffs on China. And it seems to be leaning towards industrial policy, friendshoring, bringing production back to the United States in a way that it was not, the Biden administration is not identical to Trump, but it's 80% overlap. So that as Canada looks forward to who might be the next administration, we have some challenges in dealing with the United States in a Biden era. In a Trump era, I think what's different is the unpredictability. And the tariffs are likely to stay. But the boldness, at the same time that he was hammering China on multiple fronts, and his Mike Pompeo, his Secretary of State, was as hawkish as they come, he said, let's make deals. And it's those deals that scared Taiwan. It was those deals that made Canada nervous. We couldn't know what was going to come next. So we're into a really interesting moment in which we don't know who's going to be the next president of the United States. And we're not 100% sure who's going to be a Canadian prime minister having to deal with that new government.
Well, let's take a look at that Biden-Trudeau synergy in some ways, because they are politically similar. Mm-hmm. Is it important that we maintain that good relationship because there is this relationship that is complementary? What happens if one of those two partners changes?
Well, I think this is a question that has everybody scratching their heads. What Canada wants and needs and can provide to deal with a United States that might be far more protectionist, might be far more interested in managed trade than free trade. The United States is stepping away from many multilateral organizations, pursuing instead unilateral American efforts or deals that it structures in its own image. The era of multilateralism is slipping away, and whoever our prime minister is, I think is going to have to deal with that new reality. Mm. Now, do we do it by doubling down on our relationship with the United States? Let's forget, basically, the Asia-Pacific or Indo-Pacific world. We'll deal with them, but keep the Bain game here, or do we try to diversify in new ways? And I think this new Indo-Pacific strategy the government's come up with is trying to square that circle. It wants to expand interactions in Asia. It wants to get closer to the United States, but it's doing so at the expense of an economic relationship with China.
In a report that was delivered to Jackson Hole conference last year, Professor Alvaro from Harvard Business School pointed out that there is a mobilization of movement of companies out of China. Mm-hmm. And they're not necessarily all rushing back to North America, but they're going to Vietnam, Taiwan, Korea, Indonesia, Australia. And part of that is, of course, it's now opening up these relationships into India. How important is it for Canada that we take our focus off of China and really start to spread our relationship around the South Pacific?
Well, I think that some Canadian companies, a lot of international companies, are making that decision themselves. They're moving some of their capital out of China. Roughly a quarter of foreign firms that were there 2 years ago. Now, COVID was part of the cause, but it's much bigger. They don't like the conflict between the United States and China. There's geopolitical instability. They feel they are under new pressure inside China, so they're moving. But I think the idea of abandoning the Chinese economy is not one that many companies want to do, in part because, as you quite precisely put it, China is not just China, businesses in China. They're all over Asia and they're in the world. We see this big influx of Mexican products mm-hmm. into the United States. Well, dig beneath the surface. Many of those are companies that are Chinese.
Yeah.
And global production systems can adjust in ways. So China isn't disappearing, but basing activities there's a lot of reluctance.
The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of Audlin Brown, BD Developments, Stem Cell Technologies, and listeners like you.
Do you think that we're in some ways overreacting a little bit, because I think that the relationship with China has been economically beneficial to Canada. Mm. If we take a look at 2008, Canada fared quite well. And one of the main reasons for that was our very solid relationship with China.
Agreed.
Do we need to be cautious about rushing away from China a little too quickly?
Oh, I think those who were calling the shots on these issues in Ottawa are quite aware of this. Their new Indo-Pacific strategy doesn't say get out of China, but it says if you're working in China, be aware of some new risks. Mm-hmm. And also look at diversifying into other parts of what we used to call Asia-Pacific and is now called Indo-Pacific. That includes India in a bigger way, mm-hmm. but Southeast Asia, et cetera. And so that idea of diversification, in some cases with China, it's Chinese companies that Canadian pension funds are investing in. But that diversification, it's not an abandonment of China, but it's saying, let's put more emphasis elsewhere, in part as a partial hedge against potentially closing of borders with the United States.
Yeah, I've heard it described as Indo-Pacific, it's Indo-Pacific and China. Like, look at it as China is, of course, this strong, dominant market, and we do want to maintain solid economic ties with the Chinese, right. but that we do need to diversify. What's the likelihood that we're going to be able to shift our attention to India, which in many ways has the ability to fill some gaps for us? Are we in a position actually to be able to realize those opportunities, especially in light of the tense situation that we see between our two governments?
Rhetorically, the India market, the big opportunity, has been a vision, an idea much in the minds of Canadian policymakers for a long time. It hasn't materialized. Yeah. It didn't materialize partly because the Indian economy didn't grow, but we found numerous barriers, policy regulation barriers to that diversification. But there is hope, and this new Indo-Pacific strategy paid more attention to India. But I think realistically, Stuart, that there is very few thinking that India would be an alternative to China, and that it could be, regardless of the political problems, which the current ones are not insignificant.
No.
There's going to be real problems at the kind of irritant level. But structurally, India as a bet for Canada, or as a bet for any country in the region, no one's putting it ahead of China. But the idea is diversify, get both. Where Canada's putting the emphasis right now is, what can we ramp up with Japan, with South Korea? And energy is an important part of that picture, energy exports to the region. Controversial, but real.
Well, that actually brings up an interesting point, because we have a government right at the moment that's trying to move away from energy exporting and reduce a reliance on fossil fuels. And yet it is one of the most valuable resources that we have that we can sell into those markets. How do we reconcile that?
Well, it's a challenge, and the Liberal government for the last decade has moved ahead with energy exports to Asia, but on a slow speed track. They're gearing up for liquid natural gas mm-hmm. exports, but on, again, a limited basis and a phase out basis. If we have a change of government in Canada, it's very likely that that perspective would change. Mm-hmm. And that instead of talking about trade in manufactured goods, other kinds of things, that energy exports to Asia would quickly rise in priority of a non-liberal, another government here in Canada.
The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of Audlin Brown, BD Developments, Stem Cell Technologies, and listeners like you.
When you take a look at the current situation, how would you advise government that we move forward, considering there's so many uncertainties at play right now? We have elections happening in more than 50 countries around the world. What is it that we need to be careful about as we dance our way through the next year or two?
Well, one is undue expectations of what can be accomplished. Canada is not a great power. It is not a major power. And so it of necessity needs to pick its spots where it's going to make a hit. The new Indo-Pacific strategy raises several possibilities, mm-hmm. many of them in diversification, trying to build some new institutions, see a more visible Canadian presence, ramp up what our universities are doing, et cetera. But the danger is that we are spreading the butter pretty thin. Even though it's new money, it's the first time in 20 years that we've had new funds for new initiatives between Canada and Indo-Pacific countries. But the spread from new money to the military, you know, a quarter of the new funds devoted are going to bring more naval vessels into the region. At the same time that we want trade diversification, that we want our universities to expand, we're going to have to depend on the Canadian public and Canadian business to do these things without a great deal of funding. And that means running in 20 different directions at the same time. Focus is difficult for any Canadian government.
When you take a look at countries like Pakistan, for instance, which is part of the Indo-Canadian strategy, but we take a look at the legal landscape there, the uncertainty in government, you know, and yet it looks like a market that could hold tremendous promise. Is it even worth exploring for Canadians? And I ask this because I've had a number of people suggest to me, look, there's a great additional partner here in Pakistan, but it looks like it's a very, very challenging regulatory and legal environment to wade into.
Well, I think that's a decision that ultimately is going to need to be made and is being made by Canadian companies. The risk environment in Pakistan is very high. You've got political uncertainty. You have geopolitical tensions with India next door. You have all kinds of domestic violence. There's high corruption levels. So again, a company has to know what those risks are. But some companies make money. How far the Canadian government should push that, I think there's an element of realism now in making sure that companies know not just what opportunities are, but what risks are. And that includes China, and it includes Pakistan. It also includes India. And that's I think, been the a flaw in thinking, is that India is low-hanging fruit for Canadian companies. Some companies, yes.
Yeah.
But combine all of the risk factors in India, there's also a whole set of problems. But the other risk factor recently has been Indian interference in Canadian politics and society. So you get that irritant that has been major in the Canada-China relationship is almost equally important in the Canada-India relationship right now. So how you manage these new awareness this and hyperventilation about outside interference in our system with our desire to be more international, to interact on multiple levels with the Indias and the Chinas. This is a real challenge for Canadian democracy and society.
It's going to be a very interesting journey to be watching. You're watching closely. Thank you very much for shedding a bit of light on what's going on here between Canada and those countries that are so important to us, China, India, and in particular the United States. Thanks for your time today.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening, and please visit conversationsthatmatter.ca and become a subscriber. And thank you to Audlin Brown, BD Developments, and Stem Cell Technologies for their support.